all medications, no matter what flavor, and others clamp shut for most or all of them. But it helps to try different flavorings if you're facing resistance. What is the dose? How often should the medication be given? Should I wake my baby in the middle of the night for a dose? This is rarely necessary, fortunately. Should it be given before, with, or after meals? Can it be given with breast milk, formula, or other liquids? Does it interact negatively with any foods? If the prescribed medication is to be given 3 or more times a day, is there an equally effective alternative that can be given just once or twice a day? If the dose is spit out or vomited up, should I give another dose? What if a dose is missed? Should I give an extra or double dose? What if an extra dose is inadvertently given? How soon can I expect to see an improvement? When should I contact the doctor if there is no improvement? When can the medication be discontinued? Does my baby have to finish the full prescription? What common side effects may be expected? What adverse reactions could occur? Which should be reported to the doctor? Could the medication have a negative effect on any chronic medical condition my baby has? If my baby is taking any other medication, prescription, or over-the-counter, could there be an adverse interaction? Is the prescription refillable? What is the shelf life of the medication? If any is left, can it be used again at a later date if the doctor advises use of the same medication? Giving medicine safely. To be sure that your child gains the maximum benefit from medication with the least amount of risk, always observe these rules. Do not give a baby under 2 months of age any medication, not even an over-the-counter one, not recommended or prescribed for him or her by a doctor. Do not give your baby medication of any kind, over-the-counter, his or her own leftover prescription, or anyone else's prescription, without a specific go-ahead from the doctor. In most cases, this will mean getting an okay to medicate each time your baby is sick, except when the doctor has given you standing instructions. For example, your doctor may tell you that whenever your baby runs a temperature over 102 degrees, give acetaminophen, or when wheezing begins, use the asthma medicine. Unless the doctor specifically instructs you otherwise, give a medication only for the indications listed on the label or information insert. Do not give your baby more than one medication at a time unless you've checked with the doctor or pharmacist to be sure the combination is safe. Check the expiration date. Drugs that have expired aren't only less potent, but may also have undergone chemical changes that in some cases can make them harmful. This applies to prescription meds you may have hanging around from a baby's previous illness too. Always check the expiration or discard by date before you buy a drug or pick up a prescription. Recheck expiration dates periodically. Otherwise, you may end up making a pharmacy run in the wee hours. Store medication according to instructions on the label or package insert. If a medication must be kept cold, store it in the refrigerator at home and in an insulated bag with an ice pack when you'll need to give it while you're away from home. Administer medications only according to the directions your child's doctor or the pharmacist has given you, or according to label directions on over-the-counter products. If directions on the label or on the printed pharmacy materials that come with the drug conflict with the doctor's instructions or aren't specified for your baby's age, call the doctor or pharmacist to resolve the conflict before giving the medication. Follow suggested dosing information about timing, shaking, and giving with or without food. Reread the label before each dose, both to be sure you have the right medication and to remind yourself about dosing, timing, and other pertinent information. If you're giving it at night, check the label first to make sure you haven't grabbed the wrong bottle. Measure medications meticulously. Once you've nailed down the correct dose, make sure you dispense that dose precisely. Dispense the medication in a calibrated medicine spoon, dropper, syringe, cup, or medicine pacifier. If your baby will suck on it, not all will. Never increase or decrease a dosage unless the doctor has directed you to. If your baby spits out or vomits up part of a dose of pain relievers or vitamins, it's usually smart to play it safe and not give extra. Underdosing is less risky than overdosing. If you're giving antibiotics, however, check with the doctor about what to do if your baby spits out or vomits up part of one or more doses. To prevent choking, don't squeeze your baby's cheeks, hold his or her nose, or force his or her head back when giving medicine. If your baby is old enough to sit, dispense it with him or her in an upright position. If your baby doesn't sit yet, aim the dropper toward the inside of baby's cheek while you prop baby up slightly. This will prevent choking. Don't point the dropper toward the back of the mouth, since that could trigger gagging. Don't put medicine in a bottle or sippy cup of breast milk, formula, or juice, unless your doctor recommends it. Your child may not drink the whole bottle or cup and won't get the entire medication dose. Once baby is taking solids, ask the doctor if it's okay to mix the medicine with food, say pureed fruit, though only if you're sure baby will eat all the medicine-spiked food. Keep a record of the time each dose is given, so you'll always know when you gave the last one. It's easy to forget. This will minimize the chance of missing a dose or accidentally doubling up. But don't stress if you're a little late with a scheduled medication. Just get back on schedule with the next dose. Always follow your doctor's instructions on how long to give the medication. If your doctor's instructions differ from the label, be sure to check in with the pediatrician for the exact prescription recommendations. Don't continue giving a medication longer than prescribed. If your baby seems to be having an adverse reaction to a medication, stop it temporarily and check with the doctor right away before resuming use. If another caregiver at home or at daycare is responsible for giving your child medication during the day, be sure that he or she is familiar with the drug dispensing protocol. Never pretend medicine is a treat. Sure, that trick might get the dose down without a fuss, but that kind of association could lead to overdosing if your baby somehow finds and manages to open the medication, or any medication later, and is tempted to sample more of the treat.
Acetaminophen or ibuprofen. There are many kinds of pain relievers and fever reducers on the market, but only two that should be considered for young children. Acetaminophen, such as Tylenol, Tempra, and Panadol for babies 2 months and older, and ibuprofen, such as Motrin and Advil for babies 6 months and older. Never give your baby under 2 months medication, even over-the-counter pain and fever reducers, without consulting with the doctor first. Both acetaminophen and ibuprofen are generally recommended interchangeably by pediatricians to relieve pain or fever, though they work differently in the body and have different side effects. Acetaminophen is a pain and fever reliever only. It doesn't reduce inflammation that might be triggering pain. It's considered safe when used as recommended. Dosing is every 4 to 6 hours. A good thing, since you'll likely pull it off the shelf multiple times in your baby's first year, but shouldn't be given regularly for more than a week at a time, since long-term use can cause liver damage. A large overdose of acetaminophen, about 15 times the recommended dose, can cause fatal liver damage, yet another reason why all medicines should be stored out of your baby's reach. Your baby won't swallow liquid meds? Ask the doctor about giving acetaminophen in suppository form, Feverol, after age 6 months. In addition to relieving fever and pain, ibuprofen has an anti-inflammatory effect, making it more effective when there's inflammation at the root of the pain, as there is with teething. It's also slightly more powerful and longer lasting. Dosing is every 6 to 8 hours. Ibuprofen is generally safe, with the biggest drawback being the potential for stomach upset. To avoid, Don't give it on an empty stomach, and don't use it to treat stomach pain. Never give your baby a pain reliever formulated for older children or adults, even in a reduced dose. Make sure you use the infant formulations. Don't give these to your baby. Some of the medications you may be used to reaching for can be unsafe for babies. These include cough and cold remedies. Studies have shown that children's over-the-counter cough and cold remedies don't stop the sniffles or silence the hacking in little ones, and they may even cause young kids to develop serious side effects, such as rapid heart rate and convulsions. That's why the FDA advises that these drugs not be given to children under age 2, and why the AAP has extended that recommendation to apply to all children under the age of 6. Aspirin and anything containing salicylates. Doctors have been warning parents for years against giving their kids aspirin, but it's a message that bears repeating. Don't give aspirin, even children's aspirin, or a medication containing aspirin to children younger than 18 years, unless it has been specifically prescribed by the doctor. Aspirin has been linked to the onset of Reye's syndrome, a potentially fatal disease in children. Although research comes down hardest on aspirin, the National Reye's Syndrome Foundation advises against giving children any medication that contains any form of salicylate, so read ingredient lists on drug labels carefully. Herbal remedies. They've been used for centuries to relieve the symptoms of hundreds of ailments. They're available without a prescription. They're natural. But are herbal remedies really effective and safe, especially when it comes to your little one? No one knows for sure. What is known is that some herbs have a medicinal effect, some very powerful prescription drugs are actually derived from herbs, and that any substance that has a medicinal effect should be categorized as a drug. That means the same precautions need to be taken with herbs as with other drugs. But there are additional concerns with herbal remedies. Herbs are not regulated by the federal government for either effectiveness or safety. So when you pick up an herbal remedy, you may not get what you think you're getting, and you may get ingredients or contaminants that you didn't expect and that you certainly don't want. So just as you wouldn't give your baby a medicine without the doctor's approval, you shouldn't give an herbal remedy without a medical okay either. And no, the guy in the supplement department of the health food market doesn't count. That includes homeopathic treatments for colic, gas, teething, and so on. Check with the doctor before dosing your baby with any of them.
Helping the medicine go down. If you're lucky, your baby is one of those who actually looks forward to, or at least doesn't strongly object to, medicine taking, who savors or tolerates the taste of those sweet syrupy liquids, and who opens up wide at the sight of a medicine dropper. If you're not so lucky, your little one possesses a sixth sense that says clamp mouth shut when medicine is anywhere in the vicinity. To break the seal on your baby's tight lips, consider timing. Unless you're instructed to give the medication with or after meals, plan on serving it up just before feeding or snacking. First, because your baby's more likely to accept it when hungry, and second, because if medication is vomited up, less food will be lost. Delivery. If your baby turns up that button nose at the medicine dropper, use a plastic syringe that squirts out liquid meds, or a medicine spoon. Never use a regular spoon. Or try a bottle nipple or medicine pacifier so baby can suck the medicine out, if baby will suck long enough to get all the medication out. Follow this with breast milk or formula or water for an older baby from the same nipple, so any medication remaining in the nipple can be rinsed out in the baby's mouth. If you meet resistance, try switching up the delivery system. A little variety may distract enough to get a dose in. If any liquid leaks out of your baby's mouth, use your finger to push it back in. Chances are your baby will latch right onto your finger and suck the rest off. Location. Taste buds are concentrated on the front and center of the tongue. So bypass those finicky taste zones by placing the medicine between the rear gum and the inside of the cheek, where it will easily glide down the throat with minimal contact with taste buds. Temperature. Ask the pharmacist whether chilling the medication will affect potency. If it won't, offer the medicine to your baby cold. The taste will be less pronounced. If the medicine can't be chilled, offer your baby a cold bottle first, or a mesh feeding bag with frozen breast milk or formula for a young baby, or crushed ice or frozen fruit in it for an older baby, so his or her tongue gets slightly chilled. A trick. Gently blow on your baby's face when giving the medicine. It will trigger the swallowing reflex in young babies. Or give your little one a pacifier to suck on immediately after dropping or squirting the medicine into that sweet mouth. The sucking action will help the medicine get where it needs to go. Flavor. Ask your pharmacy whether a better tasting flavoring can be added to a yucky tasting liquid. FDA-approved medication flavorings, such as Flavor X, come in every flavor from bubblegum to tangerine and are designed to combat the bad taste and smell of liquid medicines.
Dose right. Once a baby is old enough to be given an over-the-counter medication, such as acetaminophen or ibuprofen, the appropriate dose is based on weight, not age, which is why you'll need to get the proper dosing from the doctor or pharmacist before you medicate your little one. The most common infant illnesses.
Happily, babies in their first year of life are generally healthy. Even when they do get sick, the bugs they catch don't usually bug them for very long. What's more, these common illnesses are typically easy to treat. Here's what you need to know. Common cold. The common cold is even more common among the very young. That's because babies and small children haven't yet had the chance to build up immunities against the many different cold viruses in circulation. So be prepared to have at least a few run-ins with a runny nose during the first couple of years. Probably more if your child attends daycare or has older siblings. Symptoms. Happily, most cold symptoms are mild. They include runny nose. Discharge is watery at first and then thickens and becomes opaque and sometimes yellowish or even greenish. Nasal congestion or stuffiness. Sneezing. Sometimes mild fever. Sometimes sore or scratchy throat, not easy to spot in a baby. Dry cough, which may get worse at night and toward the end of a cold. Fatigue, crankiness, loss of appetite. Cause, contrary to popular belief, colds aren't caused by being cold, going bareheaded in the winter, getting feet wet, exposure to drafts, and so on, though being chilled can lower a baby's immunity. Colds, also known as upper respiratory infections, or URIs, are caused by viruses. These viruses are spread via hand-to-hand contact. A child with a cold wipes her snotty nose with her hand and then holds hands with another child, and the infection is passed on. Via droplet transmission from sneezes or coughs, and via contact with an object that's been contaminated, such as a toy that's mouthed first by a sick child and then by a healthy child. There are more than 200 viruses known to cause colds, which explains why colds are so common. The incubation period for a cold is usually 1 to 4 days. A cold is typically most contagious a day or two before symptoms even appear, but can also be passed along when the cold is already underway. Once the really runny nose dries up, a cold is less contagious. Duration. The common cold usually lasts 7 to 10 days. Day 3 is usually the worst. A residual dry nighttime cough, which may not appear until the end of the cold, may linger longer. Treatment. There is no known cure for the common cold, but symptoms can be treated, as necessary, with saline nose drops to soften dried mucus that may be clogging your baby's nostrils. Suctioning of mucus with a nasal aspirator may be necessary to help baby breathe through the nose. moist air to help clear nasal passages. Run a cool mist humidifier, which is safer than a warm mist humidifier, but do keep it clean, in baby's bedroom at night. Moisturizing ointment. Spread lightly on the rims of the nostril and under the nose to help prevent chapping and soreness. Slight elevation of the head of the crib, if okayed by the doctor, using only a folded towel under the mattress to make breathing easier. Acetaminophen for babies over 2 months or ibuprofen for babies over 6 months for fever reduction if needed. It usually isn't with a cold. Check with your doctor. Plenty of fluids, particularly warm ones. Chicken broth, once the ingredients have been introduced, really is effective, and it can be served strained and slightly warm in a sippy cup. And a nutritious diet. If baby isn't taking solids yet, be sure to keep up breastfeeding or formula bottles. For babies on solids, try to offer vitamin C-rich foods each day. Frequent small meals may be more appealing than 3 squares. Prevention. The number one way to prevent a cold is to wash your baby's hands regularly. Can't get to a sink? Hand sanitizing gels or wipes will do in a pinch, though they're not as effective as soap and water in washing away those germs. Keep your baby away from anyone with a cold when possible. Use a disinfectant solution to clean surfaces that may be contaminated with cold germs, and follow other tips for preventing the spread of illness. Breastfeeding can reduce susceptibility to colds, but not entirely. Remember that there's no way to entirely protect your little one from cold viruses. The average child has 6 to 8 colds a year, and that's not usually a concern, as long as growth and development are normal. When to call the doctor? Usually there's no need to contact the doctor for a simple cold, but if it's your baby's first cold, or if your baby is under 3 months, a call to the pediatrician is a good idea, if only to put your mind at ease. Also call if your baby shows any of the following. Extreme lethargy, refusal to eat or drink, difficulty sleeping, is very restless during the night or has pain that causes night waking, will be difficult to detect in a small baby. Wheezing. Breathing significantly more rapidly than usual. A cough that's getting worse or continues during the day after other symptoms are gone. Swollen glands in the neck. Pulling on ears day or night. Running a fever over 102 degrees. Or has a low-grade fever for more than 4 days. Symptoms last longer than 10 days. If your baby seems to have a continuous cold, a chronically runny nose, or very long-lasting or frequent colds, especially when accompanied by under-eye circles, talk to the doctor about the possibility that allergies might be responsible, though it's rare for this to be the case in babies.
The Frequent Cold Program. Does it seem as if your baby has enrolled in the frequent cold program, catching every cold or other virus the older siblings come down with, or bringing one home from daycare every other week? There's an upside, believe it or not. Frequent colds and bouts with other bugs boost your baby's immune system, making it stronger in the long run and helping your little one better fend off the next bug making the rounds. For more on common contagious illnesses, go to whattoexpect.com. Allergies this year? The good news is that allergies to inhaled substances, pollen, pet dander, dust mites, and mold are rare among infants in their first year. For more on those kinds of allergies, see What to Expect the second year. More common in the first year are allergies to foods and eczema, two allergic reactions more common in babies with a family history of allergies, asthma, hay fever, or eczema.
Ear infection. Symptoms. Also known as acute otitis media, an ear infection is when the middle ear, between the outer part of the ear and the innermost part of the ear, gets plugged with fluid and becomes infected and inflamed. When examined by the doctor, you won't be able to see this from the outside. The eardrum appears pink early in the illness, then red and bulging. Symptoms include pain, often worse at night because lying down changes pressure in the ear. Your baby may complain or tug, rub, or clutch at an affected ear. Crying when sucking on breast or bottle may indicate ear pain that has radiated to the jaw. Fever, fatigue, crankiness, and irritability. If the infection persists or worsens, the eardrum could perforate, develop a small hole, which usually heals in less than a week. If this happens, pus, often tinged with blood, may spill into and be seen in the ear canal. The perforation will relieve the pressure and thus the pain, but treatment of the infection will help prevent further damage. So it's crucial that you tell the doctor if you suspect a rupture. Crust in and around the ear is a telltale sign. Often, even after treatment, fluid remains in the middle ear, a condition called otitis media with effusion. Symptoms include mild hearing loss. Your baby may fail to respond consistently to sounds, such as your voice. While typically temporary, usually lasting about 4 to 6 weeks, the hearing loss can become permanent if the condition continues untreated for many months, especially if there are also frequent bouts of infection. Cause: ear infections are often secondary infections brought on by a cold or other upper respiratory infection, or rarely in babies, allergies, which causes the lining of the eustachian tube, the tube that connects the middle ear to the nose and the back of the throat, to swell, become congested, and accumulate fluid. The fluid becomes a breeding ground for infection-causing germs. Behind the inflamed eardrum, the buildup of pus and mucus produced by the body in an attempt to respond to the infection causes the pain of earache. Young children are more likely than older children and adults to get ear infections because their eustachian tubes are short, allowing germs to travel up them more quickly and making it easy for them to become blocked, and horizontal rather than slanted, making drainage poor. And because they get more colds and other respiratory illnesses in general than older kids and adults do. Duration. Although pain, fever, and other symptoms usually diminish or disappear shortly after treatment is begun, it can take 10 days or more of treatment with antibiotics to resolve an acute ear infection. Fluid may remain in the middle ear for much longer. Treatment. If you suspect an ear infection, call the doctor so that you can get your child's ears checked. If there's an infection, the doctor may take a wait-and-see approach or prescribe a course of antibiotics for your infant, depending on how severe the infection is. You might be asked to come back into the office for a recheck, but this may not be needed if your baby seems to be feeling better. Your doctor will likely recommend acetaminophen for babies over 2 months or ibuprofen for babies over 6 months for pain and fever relief. Heat applied with a heating pad set on low, warm compresses, or a covered hot water bottle filled with warm water, or cold, applied with an ice pack wrapped in a wet washcloth, can also be used to relieve pain. Elevating your little one's head with pillows under the crib mattress during sleep may also be helpful. Prevention. Here's what you can do to minimize your child's risk. Breastfeed for at least 6 months, preferably the entire first year or longer. Reduce exposure to germs as much as possible, since even common colds can lead to ear infections. That means steering clear of sick kids and washing your hands and your child's hands frequently. Stay up to date on your child's immunizations. The pneumococcal vaccine, which is given to prevent serious infections such as pneumonia and meningitis, may also reduce the risk of ear infections. Since ear infections are a common complication of flu, make sure your baby receives a yearly flu vaccine after age 6 months. Be sure to feed baby in a more upright feeding position, especially when he or she has a respiratory infection. Limit pacifier use to sleep time only. Wean off the bottle at 12 months. prevent exposure to secondhand smoke, which makes children more vulnerable to ear infections. When to call the doctor? Call during regular office hours if you suspect an ear infection. It's not an emergency. Call again if your child isn't feeling better after 3 days, with or without antibiotics, or if the infection seems to get better and then returns. It could be a sign of a chronic ear infection. Call too if you notice any hearing loss.
Some probiotics with those antibiotics? No matter how many times you wash your baby's hands or how much sanitizer you use, sooner or later, your little one is going to come down with an infection, let's say an ear infection, that requires antibiotics. While antibiotics are wonderful for wiping out bacterial infections, broad-spectrum antibiotics aren't all that discerning. They aren't able to differentiate between the infection-causing bacteria and other benign bacteria in the body, which means that along with the bad bacteria that gets wiped out, some good and very important bacteria, especially those found in the digestive tract, are also destroyed. And that can come with a very unpleasant drawback, diarrhea. One way to manage antibiotic-related diarrhea, besides investing in extra-absorbent diapers, is to give your baby probiotics. Probiotics, live active cultures like Lactobacillus or Bifidobacterium, are beneficial, or pro-bacteria, that help counterbalance the negative effects of antibiotics. Research shows that giving probiotics to children can reduce antibiotic-related diarrhea by 75%. For this reason, pediatricians often recommend that kids take probiotics whenever they're on antibiotics. Another reason, probiotics help prevent the overgrowth of yeast, the culprit in Candida diaper rash, that can be triggered by antibiotic use. But that's not the only thing probiotics can do. They also may combat regular diarrhea and constipation, sinus and respiratory infections, urinary tract infections, and possibly even asthma and eczema. What's more, probiotics are believed to boost the immune system in general, making it even less likely that your baby will come down with those illnesses in the first place. Think of probiotics as the reserve corps, the reinforcements sent in to bulk up the numbers of helpful bacteria and crowd out the illness-causing bacteria. These good little soldiers can also help strengthen the intestinal lining so that bad bugs can't cross into the bloodstream. Probiotics can change the intestinal environment too, making it more acidic and therefore less desirable for bad bacteria. So how can you get probiotics into your baby? Some formulas have probiotics added in. Once your baby is on solids, the most obvious source is in yogurt, once it's introduced into baby's diet. Be sure to choose ones with active cultures. It'll say so on the label. Or ask the pediatrician to recommend a probiotic supplement. There are many available over the counter, and they come in powder form or drops for babies. Ask, too, about how frequently that supplement should be given, how to space out doses. Probiotics shouldn't be given at the same time as antibiotics, and how it should be stored, sometimes in the refrigerator.
Flu. Symptoms. The flu, short for influenza, is a contagious viral infection that usually rears its very infectious head between the months of October and April, aka flu season. Its symptoms include fever, dry cough, sore throat. Your baby may reject food and drink or seem in pain when swallowing. Runny or stuffy nose, muscle aches and pains, headache, extreme fatigue, lethargy, chills, loss of appetite, sometimes in young children, vomiting and diarrhea. Cause. The flu is caused by the influenza virus and different strains, or rarely, new strains like the H1N1 virus, circulate each year. Your little one can catch the flu by coming into contact with an infected person, especially if that sick someone sneezes or coughs on your baby, or by touching or mouthing something, a toy, a cell phone, a shopping cart handle, a sippy cup, that an infected person has touched. The incubation period for the flu is usually 2 to 5 days, If your little one comes down with the flu, symptoms usually last about a week, though some can linger for up to 2 weeks. Treatment. Treatment includes fluids and rest. To relieve flu symptoms, humidify the air in your baby's room and give acetaminophen or ibuprofen only as needed for pain or high fever. Do not give aspirin or any medication containing aspirin or salicylates. An antiviral drug may be prescribed for those children, even newborns, with severe symptoms or at high risk of complications, but it needs to be administered in the first 48 hours to be effective. Prevention. Since complications from the flu are more serious in children under age 5, you should do everything you can to protect your little one from the flu, including getting your older baby the flu shot, making sure the whole family and all child care providers are also vaccinated, and steering clear of sick people. When to call the doctor. If you suspect your child has come down with the flu, just check the symptoms list if you're not sure. Call your doctor. Respiratory syncytial virus, RSV. Symptoms. In most infants, the virus causes symptoms resembling those of the common cold, including runny nose, low-grade fever, decreased appetite, irritability. In some infants, the infection can progress to include some or all of these lower respiratory symptoms: bronchiolitis, rapid breathing, hacking cough, wheezing sound when breathing, grunting, retractions. The skin between the ribs is visibly sucked in with each breath. Lethargy, sleepiness, dehydration. Noticeable bluish color in the skin around the mouth. Cause. RSV is such a common virus that nearly all adults and children are affected by it sooner or later. A normal cold virus or mild RSV infection affects just the nose and upper part of the lungs. But these symptoms can worsen rapidly in some babies as the virus infects the lungs, inflaming the lower part of the respiratory tract and the smallest inner branches of the airways, making it difficult to breathe. Such an infection is called bronchiolitis. For most babies, the illness is mild. But babies at risk, such as premature babies, because their lungs are underdeveloped, and they haven't yet received enough antibodies from their mothers to help them fight off RSV disease once they've been exposed to it, are more likely to get severe bronchiolitis and end up in the hospital. Method of transmission. RSV is highly contagious and is transmitted by direct hand contact from infected individuals. The infection can also be spread through the air by coughing and sneezing. The period of greatest contagiousness is in the first 2 to 4 days of the infection. RSV infections are most common during the winter and early spring. Duration. Mild RSV lasts 3 to 5 days. It can last much longer in premature babies or if there are complications. Treatment. For mild RSV, treat as you would for a cold. For those whose RSV has caused more severe bronchiolitis, nebulizer, which may help open up the airways. In severe cases, hospitalization, oxygen administration, and IV fluids. Prevention. To help prevent RSV, breastfeed if possible. Make hand washing a priority around the house. Keep older siblings away from the baby as much as possible if they have a runny nose, cold, or fever. Do not take a high-risk baby out to crowded areas, such as shopping centers, during RSV season. Do not smoke or let anyone smoke around your baby. An intramuscular shot of the antibody palivizumab that helps prevent the illness is given once a month during the cold winter months to certain high-risk babies. When to call the doctor? Call the doctor if your baby has breathing difficulties or changes in breathing pattern, Rapid breathing, wheezing, or the skin between the ribs is sucked in with each breath. A fever persists for more than 4 or 5 days and/or remains elevated despite giving acetaminophen or ibuprofen.
For parents, keeping your germs to yourself. Mom's got a cold, dad's got the flu. Germs have a way of making the rounds through the family. And later on, when your little one is in school, he or she will be bringing plenty your way. For now, chances are much better that you or other family members will pass germs on to him or her. To minimize the possibility that your baby will catch your cold or any other infection you or another family member comes down with, wash your hands thoroughly before touching him or her or anything that goes into his or her mouth, including hands, bottle, pacifier, and your nipples, and avoid drinking from the same cup. Keep baby from touching any cold sore or other contagious rash, and steer clear of kissing while you have symptoms of infection. And make sure your immunizations are up to date. Anyone who lives with or cares for your baby should make sure to follow the same rules. By the way, it's fine to continue nursing your baby while you're sick. In fact, breastfeeding strengthens your baby's immune system. All that said, you'll also have to resign yourself to the fact that few babies escape their first year cold-free. Even with all the above precautions, your little one is likely to succumb to the sniffles at some point. And because you spend so much close time together and share susceptibility, he or she receives only immunities from you that you already have. Baby is actually more liable to catch a cold from you than from a passing sneezer on the street.
Croup. Symptoms. Croup, laryngotracheobronchiolitis, is an infection, usually seen in late fall and winter, that causes the voice box and windpipe to become inflamed and the airways just below the vocal cords to swell and get very narrow. Symptoms include labored or noisy breathing. You may hear a high-pitched breathing sound when your child inhales, called stridor. A harsh barking cough that sounds like a seal's call and usually comes on at night. Retractions. The skin between the ribs is visibly sucked in with each breath. Sometimes fever. Hoarseness. Stuffy nose. Cold-like symptoms may appear first. Difficulty swallowing. Irritability. Cause. Croup, most common in early childhood, is usually caused by the parainfluenza virus, a respiratory virus that isn't related to the flu, though it can also be caused by other respiratory viruses, including the influenza virus. It's spread the same way other contagious germs are spread. Your child can become exposed by coming into contact with another child, like an older sib or daycare peer, who has croup, especially through a cough or sneeze, or by coming into contact with something an infected child has touched. The germs can survive on surfaces, like toys. Duration. Croup can last several days to a week and may recur. Treatment. Though the cough may sound scary, these simple measures will usually relieve discomfort in your croupy baby. Steam inhalation. Take your baby into the bathroom with you, run hot water in the shower, and close the bathroom door. Stay in there, if you can, until the barking noise settles down. Cool, moist air. On a cool night, take your baby out into the fresh air for 15 minutes. Or open the freezer and have your little one breathe in that cold air for several minutes. Humidification. Run a cool mist humidifier in the room your baby sleeps in. Upright position. Try to keep your child in an upright position for a while, since this can make it easier to breathe. You can place pillows under the mattress to prop your baby up safely at night. No pillows in the crib. Comfort and cuddles. Do your best to minimize your baby's crying, since it can make the symptoms worse. When to call the doctor. If you suspect your baby has croup, call the doctor, especially if this is your baby's first attack. If it's a repeat, Follow instructions the doctor has given you previously. Also call if the steam or cold air doesn't stop the barky cough. Your child lacks good color if there's a bluish or grayish hue around your child's mouth, nose, or fingernails. Your child has difficulty catching his or her breath, especially during the day. Or you can see retractions when the skin between the ribs pulls in with each breath. You hear stridor, a high-pitched, musical sound made when breathing during the day, or nighttime stridor that isn't promptly relieved by exposure to steam or cold. Often the pediatrician will prescribe a dose of steroids for a case of croup to relieve the swelling in the airways and make breathing easier.
Containing germs. Germs have a way of getting around, especially around a family with young children. Here's how you can help to contain those germs before they make your whole family sick. Wash those hands. Hand washing is probably the single most effective way to stop the spread of illness, so make it a house rule, whether family members are healthy or sick. Wash your hands before touching your mouth, nose, or eyes, before eating and handling food, and after nose blowing or coughing, using the toilet, or contact with someone who's sick. No sink around? Keep antibacterial wipes or gels handy when you can't manage frequent washing or when you're out of the house. Separate the sick. As much as possible, and it won't always be, try to isolate sick family members, at least for the first few days of a contagious illness. Put tissues in their place. Do sick family members tend to leave a trail of dirty tissues behind or beside them? Then they're leaving a trail of germs, too. Make sure tissues are disposed of immediately after use, flushed, or deposited in a covered trash container. Ditto for wipes you've cleaned up baby boogers with. Cover those coughs. If they can't do their coughing or sneezing into a tissue, train your crew, mom, dad, babysitter, older sibs, to do it into the inside of their elbows, not their hands. Just make sure your baby doesn't end up mouthing or snuggling in the area coughed or sneezed on. Don't pass the cup. To each their own in the bathroom, their own cup or disposable ones, their own toothbrush, their own towel. And at the table, no sharing from the same cup, spoon, fork, bowl, or plate. Mind your surfaces. Wash or spray possibly contaminated hotspot surfaces, such as bathroom faucets, phones, remotes, toys, keyboards, doorknobs, and so on, with a disinfectant.
Constipation. Constipation is rarely a problem for exclusively breastfed babies, though a breastfed newborn who isn't having frequent soft poops may not be getting enough to eat. But constipation can sometimes occur in formula-fed babies and in some breastfed babies once solids are added to the diet. Symptoms. Timing isn't everything when it comes to bowel movements. In fact, when it comes to diagnosing constipation, it's a matter of quality, not frequency. An older baby who goes a few days without pooping isn't necessarily clogged up, just as a baby who goes four times a day doesn't necessarily have diarrhea. If the stool comes out easily and looks normal, soft when on a pure liquid diet, formed but soft when solids are introduced, everything's moving along just fine, if at a somewhat slower pace. On the other hand, if your formula-fed newborn is producing firm stools less than once a day, or your older baby is producing small, round, hard stool that seems difficult to pass, the diagnosis is most likely constipation. Cause. Some children, like some adults, are more prone to constipation than others. But often constipation is linked to not eating enough high-fiber foods, not drinking enough fluids, and not getting enough physical activity. The result is dry, hard stool that builds up in the lower bowels. Constipation can also develop during or after an illness because the child's not eating, drinking, or moving much, and can be a side effect of certain medications. Treatment. To help get your older baby back on track or prevent constipation in the first place, include plenty of fiber. Serve high-fiber foods as they're introduced, such as fresh fruits, ripe pears and kiwi are particularly effective, soft-cooked minced dried fruits, especially raisins, prunes, apricots, and figs, vegetables, and whole grains. Avoid serving any refined grains, including baby cereal that doesn't specify whole grain or brown rice, which can clog up the works. Probiotics. These beneficial bacteria can help get things moving again and keep them moving. Feed your older baby whole milk yogurt that contains active cultures and ask the doctor about whether a probiotic supplement might be a good idea too. Fluids. Make sure your baby is getting enough fluids, at least a quart of fluids a day, especially if he or she was recently weaned off the bottle or breast. Many babies drink much less after graduating to a cup. Certain fruit juices, such as prune juice or pear juice, are particularly productive, but water works too. Exercise. While there's no need to sign your baby up at the local gym, do make sure his or her whole day isn't spent cooped up in an infant seat or carrier. Moving gets your child's digestive system moving. Baby isn't mobile yet? Try bicycling his or her legs to get things moving down below. Lubrication. Dabbing a bit of petroleum jelly at the anal opening may help the movement slip out more easily. For an extra stubborn case, consider slipping in a lubricated rectal thermometer to help stimulate the muscles that get movements going. Don't give any medication or laxatives for constipation unless it's been recommended or prescribed by the doctor. When to call the doctor? Call the doctor when your formula-fed newborn baby has firm stool less than once a day, or your older baby has not had a bowel movement for 4 or 5 days, or is producing small, round, difficult-to-pass stool. Constipation is accompanied by abdominal pain or vomiting. There is blood in or around the stool. Constipation is chronic, and the treatments described have been ineffective. Chronic constipation can be very painful and can affect your child's appetite and sleep. Some kids suffering from constipation also develop anal fissures, cracks or tears in the skin near the anus, that bleed and cause stool to have streaks of blood. The fissure should heal once the constipation clears up. Diarrhea. This problem, too, is unusual in breastfed babies, since breast milk protects against diarrhea. Symptoms. When your baby's poop flows a little too freely, very loose, watery poops, not seedy like a breastfed baby's stool, that makes an appearance several times a day, you're dealing with diarrhea. Other symptoms of diarrhea include poop color and or odor that may vary from the usual, mucus in the stool, and or redness and irritation around the rectum. When diarrhea continues for several days to a week, dehydration and weight loss can occur. Keep in mind that some children are naturally on a more frequent pattern of elimination. But as long as that stool, even if it comes frequently, is normal in appearance, that's not considered diarrhea. Cause. Diarrhea occurs most often when your child has a virus, has eaten something irritating to the digestive system, or has gone a little overboard in the fruit department. Apple juice is a common culprit. An allergy or food intolerance to milk, for instance, can also cause diarrhea, as can certain medications, such as antibiotics. Diarrhea that lasts longer than 6 weeks, after all the above-mentioned culprits are discontinued, is called intractable and may be linked to an overactive thyroid gland, cystic fibrosis, celiac disease, enzyme deficiencies, or other disorders. Method of transmission. Diarrhea that's caused by microorganisms can be transmitted via the feces to hand to mouth route or by contaminated foods. Diarrhea can also be triggered by excesses of intolerances of, or allergies to, certain foods or drinks. Duration. An occasional looser than normal stool, lasting anywhere from a few hours to several days, is not a cause for concern. Some intractable cases can last indefinitely, unless the underlying cause is found and corrected. A very sick baby may need hospitalization to stabilize body fluids. Treatment. To treat diarrhea, continue breast or formula feedings, since a baby with persistent diarrhea may develop temporary lactose intolerance. A switch to a lactose-free formula may be recommended if the diarrhea doesn't improve on baby's regular formula. Give fluids. Make sure your baby is breastfeeding or taking a bottle often, at least as often as usual, if not more. For older babies, water or diluted white grape juice after baby's a year old, a better choice than apple juice, which you should probably stop altogether until the diarrhea clears, may be sufficient in mild cases. If there is substantial fluid loss, and particularly if there's also vomiting, ask the doctor about giving your older baby an oral electrolyte solution, such as Pedialyte, to replace sodium and potassium lost in the diarrhea and to help prevent dehydration. Feed right. Is your little one on solids already? Mild diarrhea tends to improve more quickly when solids are continued. Severe diarrhea, with or without vomiting, usually calls for oral electrolyte solution, if the doctor recommends it, the first day, followed by a slow resumption of the normal diet over the next couple of days. Become a pro. Some research suggests that probiotics can help prevent or treat diarrhea in babies. If your baby is formula-fed, choosing a formula with probiotics could help. For older babies on solids, yogurts containing active cultures or a probiotic supplement in drops or powder form can help prevent or help treat a case of diarrhea, particularly during antibiotic therapy. Prevention. Prevent diarrhea by giving probiotics regularly if the pediatrician recommends it. Following food safety guidelines. Thoroughly washing hands after bathroom use or after changing diapers. When to call the doctor. Call the doctor if your baby shows signs of dehydration, has loose, watery stools for 24 hours, but not seedy breastfed stools, which are often watery. Is vomiting for longer than 24 hours. Refuses fluids. Has stools that are bloody or vomit that is greenish, bloody, or looks like coffee grounds. Has a bloated or swollen abdomen, or if there seems to be anything more than mild abdominal discomfort.
Signs of dehydration. Babies who are losing fluids through diarrhea and/or vomiting may become dehydrated. Call the doctor if you note the following in a baby who's vomiting, has diarrhea or a fever, or has otherwise been ill. Dry mucous membranes. You might notice cracked lips. Tearless crying. Decreased urination. Fewer than 6 wet diapers in 24 hours, or diapers that stay dry for 2 or 3 hours, should alert you to the possibility that urinary output is abnormally scant. Also, look out for urine that appears darker yellow and more concentrated. A sunken fontanelle. The soft spot on the top of the head appears depressed instead of flat. Listlessness. Additional signs appear as dehydration progresses. These require immediate medical treatment. Do not delay in calling the doctor or getting your child to an emergency room if you note any of the following symptoms. Unusual coolness and mottling of the skin of the hands and feet. Very dry mucous membranes, dry mouth, cracked lips, dry eyes. No urinary output, diapers are dry, for 6 or more hours. Extreme fussiness or unusual sleepiness.
Urinary tract infection, UTI. Symptoms. The symptoms of UTI, some of which are hard to recognize in young babies, include frequent and painful urination, blood in the urine, pain in the lower abdomen, lethargy, unusual smelling urine, and/or fever. Cause: UTIs occur because bacteria enter the urethra, the tube that carries urine from the bladder for excretion, causing infection. Because the urethra is shorter in girls and bacteria can travel up it more easily, girls have UTIs more often than boys. And when boys do get a UTI, it's more likely the result of a urinary tract abnormality. Not getting enough fluids can encourage the development of a UTI. Treatment. The treatment of choice is antibiotics. Also important, making sure a baby gets enough fluids. Prevention. To prevent UTIs, take extra care when diapering your baby. Wipe front to back and wash your hands before and after diapering. Again, make sure your baby gets enough fluids and diaper changes, and avoid using potentially irritating bubble baths and soaps. When to call the doctor. As soon as you notice symptoms of a possible UTI, call the doctor.
A better juice for your sick baby? A sick tummy got your over 1-year-old baby down? It may be time for a change of juice. Researchers have found that children recover more quickly from diarrhea when they drink white grape juice than when they stick to those high chair standards, apple and pear. They're also less likely to experience a recurrence on the white grape. Apparently, the sugar and carbohydrate composition of white grape juice is better for the digestive system and a lot less challenging in the laundry department than its purple cousin. Apple and pear juices naturally contain sorbitol, an indigestible carbohydrate that can cause gas, bloating, and discomfort, and a higher amount of fructose than glucose, while white grape juice is sorbitol-free and has an even balance of fructose and glucose. Remember to always dilute the juice, no matter which kind, with water, or skip the juice altogether and stick with water, formula, and breast milk. The most common chronic conditions.
Asthma. What is it? Asthma is a condition in which the small breathing tubes, called bronchial airways, occasionally become inflamed, swollen, and filled with mucus, often in response to an irritation to the airways, such as a cold or an allergen, although this is less common in a baby or toddler than in an older child. Asthma flare-ups can cause shortness of breath, tightness in the chest, coughing, and/or wheezing. And when it happens to your baby, it can be downright frightening for both of you. In young children, sometimes the only symptom may be a recurrent, croupy, barky cough that is worse with activity or at night and may sometimes lead to vomiting. But there may also be rapid and/or noisy breathing. Retractions, the skin between the rib appears to be sucked in with each breath, and chest congestion. Asthma is the most common chronic disease in children, and 70% of all cases of childhood asthma develop before a child turns 3. Certain hereditary and environmental risk factors can predispose a child to developing asthma, including a family history of asthma or allergies, having eczema or other allergic conditions, living with a smoker, exposure to smoke in the womb, living in an urban, polluted area, low birth weight, and overweight. It's often not easy to diagnose asthma in babies because it's hard to distinguish between a viral respiratory tract infection, like RSV, and asthma that results from a virus, since the symptoms are so similar. That means the doctor will rely heavily on what you reveal about your child's symptoms. So take careful notes about what your baby's symptoms are, how often they happen, and under what conditions, and bring those notes with you to the appointment. The doctor will also ask you about your family's medical history. Does baby's mom or dad have asthma or other allergic conditions? To try to determine if your baby is genetically predisposed to developing asthma. Management. Depending on the nature of your child's asthma, the doctor might prescribe one or both of these types of medications. A quick-relief, short-acting rescue medication called a bronchodilator that quickly opens up your child's airways when they are swelling during an asthma attack. A preventive, long-acting medication like an anti-inflammatory corticosteroid, which your baby would need to take daily to keep the airways from getting inflamed in the first place. Unlike other medications that come in a liquid form that's swallowed, most asthma medications need to be inhaled so they get delivered directly into your baby's airways. The doctor will prescribe a metered dose inhaler with an attachable plastic tube or holding chamber spacer device, which makes the inhaler easier to use and more effective. The medicine gets farther down the airway. You place the mask that is attached to the spacer device over your baby's mouth and nose. Activate the inhaler by pressing down on the canister so the correct dose goes into the spacer device. And then your child breathes normally for a few breaths, and the medication makes its way into the airways. Another option is a nebulizer machine, which creates a mist from the liquid medicine and delivers it to your baby via a mask. The nebulizer is powered by a small air pump that you plug in. Whether or not your baby is prescribed medication, it's also crucial that you do your best to prevent your little one from catching colds, flu, and other infections that can step up symptoms. The flu shot is a must for little ones over 6 months with asthma. Probiotics may show promise also in helping to manage asthma while boosting the immune system in general. Prognosis. While many children with asthma exhibit prolonged remission as they approach the teen years, airway hypersensitivity is lifelong. Symptoms often return in adulthood, though sometimes only mildly and intermittently. But even when asthma continues into adulthood, most asthmatics can keep the condition under control with the right medicines, medical care, and self-care.
Asthma or RAD? Your baby has a cold and then starts to wheeze, and the wheezing happens each time your little one gets sick. You're bracing yourself for a diagnosis of asthma, but the doctor tells you it's actually reactive airway disease, RAD, instead. What's the difference? Actually, not much. Both conditions manifest themselves and are often treated in the same way, following a cold and often continuing for many weeks after the runny nose goes away. Residual viral inflammation and excess mucus in your baby's tiny airways result in coughing and wheezing. But because of the uncertainty of asthma diagnosis in a small child, doctors often call the episodes RAD and officially call the condition asthma only if the wheezing doesn't go away, if it keeps recurring, if coughing is frequent, or if there's a family history of asthma or allergies. In fact, while 50% of babies may have episodes of RAD before age 3, only 1/3 of those children will go on to develop true asthma by age 6.
Celiac disease. What is it? Also called celiac sprue, or gluten-sensitive enteropathy, celiac disease is an autoimmune digestive disorder in which there is a sensitivity to gluten found in wheat, rye, spelt, and barley. When the gluten comes in contact with the small bowel during digestion, it damages the small intestines and interferes with the absorption of nutrients from food. Celiac disease can begin anytime after foods containing gluten are introduced into a baby's diet, or any time in childhood or adulthood. There is a wide range of symptoms, and sometimes there aren't any symptoms, but most infants and toddlers with celiac disease have stomach pain, diarrhea-like stools, or less common, constipation, for more than a few weeks, a distended abdomen, and they fail to thrive. Occasionally, the only symptom is failure to thrive. Some experts estimate that as many as 1 in 200 people have celiac disease, but many cases go undiagnosed. Since celiac disease is inherited, the odds are increased if either parent or any other siblings have the condition. If you suspect your baby may be showing signs of celiac disease, ask the doctor about testing. A blood test can determine if your baby has the gene for celiac disease, and increase levels of certain antibodies related to celiac disease. If the blood test is positive for the gene and positive for the antibodies or inconclusive, the doctor will likely want to take a biopsy of the small intestines via an endoscope through the mouth and stomach to check for damage to the villi, tiny finger-like projections that line the wall of the intestines. Management. Once the diagnosis is confirmed, you'll have to keep your baby on a strict gluten-free diet. Foods with gluten include most grains, pasta and cereal, and many processed foods. But baked goods and pasta made with rice, corn, soy, potato, or other gluten-free flours can easily replace the traditional grains. And happily, nearly all supermarkets carry gluten-free products. Check the label and look for ones that are gluten-free.